Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Finish up projects with GE-branded silicone sealants. Tub and tile silicone is 100% waterproof and offers same-day water readiness, making it perfect to use in kitchens and bathrooms. Shop our selection of GE sealants in-store and on Menards.com and save big. Plus, check out the weekly flyer to view all of our other great deals happening this week. Save big.
Hello, everybody. Good evening. Welcome to the Evangelical Dark Web. Tonight, we are going to be live discussing a multitude of topics, but mostly we're going to be focusing on the culture war and how the Daily Wire is trying to lose the culture war for all of us. And you hate to see that. That's kind of been the biggest roast this week, you know, because last week Netflix did their roast of Tom Brady, or maybe it was the week before. And that was huge for obvious reasons. But we're going to talk about some topics that had articles written about them over at Evangelical Dark Web. First, going to start out with some bad news, and then we're going to get to some more laughable material. But tonight's kind of going to be more of a roast, in a sense, because Janet Mefford needs to get roasted, and so does the Daily Wire for the absolute cringe that they came out with the Mr. Bertram cartoon. And I kind of feel like Daily Wire is trying to lose us the culture war. They're trying to set back the right wing very far in the culture war. So that's kind of what we're going to be talking about tonight. How are you doing, Anthony?
All is well. I have finished the article that will review Total State by Aaron McIntyre. So that is completed.
So oh, wow. You better loan me your copy of the book so I can read that as well, because I'm looking forward to that book. Spoiler alert, the next book that I have to read is going to be cringe, but it's going to be cringe related to research. And we have a stream next week on David Platt. So I'm going to be reading the most famous book of all, Radical. It should be an unenjoyable experience. So I do not envy that at all. I'd much rather read Aaron McIntyre than, David Platt. Because if David Platt writes like he sounds, I'm going to be in for a very bad time. Because I can't just read at 1.5 speed. I'm a slow reader. I'm not going to lie. Now, some of the material that I read is very dense. So that's why I'm a slow reader. But it'd be like that. So, all right. So let me just say, if you like the Evangelical Dark Web, you can support our work over at evangelicaldarkweb.org/join. That's linked in a description below. And we have a Patreon-like system that you can give and you get more bonus access, bonus content. I got some hot takes coming this weekend. I got a behind the scenes on the Maryland primary that you're going to read if you're a member, and I got other stuff, announcements that I give away to people who subscribe to the Evangelical Dark Web's Patreon-like system. But the least you can do is like this video, subscribe to the channel, to the podcast if you are new. Now, I did want to start off with some bad news, and the bad news comes out of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. I don't know how much you've heard about this story, Anthony, but
I mean, I'm familiar with Ryan Turnipseed, so.
Yeah, Ryan Turnipseed is a whistleblower for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. And, you know, I kind of summarize it really well in the beginning of this article here. I say, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is reputationally an Orthodox Lutheran denomination. But what happens, and it stands out apart from the ELCA, you know, the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America. However, what happens when the truth contradicts this reputation? And Ryan Turnipseed, you know, found that out the hard way. What happens when you pretty much show that the truth is that the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is not as conservative as its reputation would suggest that it is? So that is kind of what was going on with the Lutheran Church. And there's a lot more evidence that could be done, but he posted the issues that had to do with the Luther's Larger Catechism. So they have a, you know, the annotations to Luther's Larger Catechism that they wrote and came out with last year. There were some major issues with that. Side B theology, critical race theory, a lot of this stuff was in the commentaries that they were writing, and he blew the whistle on that, and they came down hard on him for that because, you know, he's a Lutheran and he's right wing, and they do not like, you know, people who are right wing in the Lutheran camp. They just he's do also not. Like establishment Lutherans will come down on you. Even Chris Roseborough came down on him. He's supposed to be a discernment blogger, but what is a discernment blogger doing defending liberalism in a denomination? Oh, it's because it's not Benny Hinn. It's not, you know, Joel Osteen. So it can't possibly be bad. And it's in my backyard. So it's not possibly bad. It just kind of makes me sick, to be honest.
I mean, keep in mind, Ryan Termsey, he's younger than us. He's what, early to mid 20s.
Yeah, he was pretty young. So, I mean, there when he went on John Harris. So yeah, he's maybe 25. I don't know.
So they really went after him when they, like, it's like, wow, you really like chose to punch at a like a young adult and make an example of him.
It's funny because the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is a denomination that has an age problem. They have a problem with the young Christian. They have a problem attracting young believers. They are a very top heavy in age denomination, despite the fact that they are more, you know, they're not exactly Episcopalians or Methodists or PCUSA, but, you know, they have a longevity problem, demographically speaking. So the fact that they, you know, this, here's this young person that's taking interest in the church, getting active in the church, and they're putting the boot on him, just very bad news. But he announced that he was, you know, basically excommunicated in absentia from the Lutheran Church. And the announcement, he said, you know, May 15th, it was when he made the announcement. May 12th is when the church, First Lutheran Church in Ponca City, that's in Oklahoma, by the way, has declared me excommunicated. If treated as valid, this would exclude me, as in Ryan Termsey, from every LCMS congregation. Reverend Hiley and First Lutheran have done this despite resigning my membership with them on April 8th and having declared multiple times that the excommunication is a necessary punitive action. The charges follow the same vague and politically contrived rationale that was made public last May. And it's worth noting that the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod thinks it's, you know, here was the talking point at the time, I believe, that Ryan Turnipseed maybe had with John Harris. And that was, you know, you can hang out with Democrats, but if you hang out with some people that have a saucy take on, you know, the Holocaust, that's, you know, you're in sin for that. And I don't think that's really something that can hold theological water to say that, you know, hanging out with neo-Nazis is worse than hanging out with Democrats. I don't know how you make that argument from scripture that it's a sin to associate with one group of people, but not the other group of people. Now, if you want to say both, then sure, you know, that's more consistent. Or if you want to say that to Democrats, because Democrats are definitely worse, I would, you know, that's definitely consistent. But anyway, I just thought that was largely what it had to do with. And, you know, someone came out with a counter signaling thread about this on Twitter this morning, basically saying, you know, doing the whole FAFO thing on him. You know, he was told not to tweet. He was told not to do this and that. It's like, they didn't really have the authority to say he couldn't speak out. And okay, Indy Lancer says it's the same picture regarding you know, Nazis in the Democrat Party. So there we go. He knows what I'm talking about. So that is the bad news. I mean, the good news is Ryan Turnipseed's a good guy. He's hopefully gonna find a good church somewhere. And
he probably already has at this point. Probably it's already been a month. It's been over a month.
And that's since he resigned his membership you know, that doesn't even mean that he hasn't been attending somewhere else. So that is the bad news that I wanted to kind of start off.
Hey, keep in mind, they probably don't do a whole lot of excommunications in the LCMS.
No, but if you're right wing, you might be facing something. So let's kind of get on to the more jollier parts of the evening. And this section, I guess, is titled "The Anti-Christian Nationalists Are Not Sending Their Best." And I want to remind you on the chat to smash that like button. Helps with the magical algorithms on the live stream, by the way. So debunking Janet Mefford's unhinged rant against Christian nationalism. And I got to tell you, this is one of the more ludicrous articles that I've read and done a review of for Evangelical Dark Web. It's pretty self-contradictory. And the amount of outsourcing of sources and, you know, evidence is just outsourced to, you know, Blake Callens, who's an AstroTurf probable Fed. It's just kind of enormous in this article. So I did my rundown of it. You know, she says, on the good parts of Christian nationalism, some of what this crowd promotes is commendable, such as opposition to abortion, attacks on the family and, you know, homosexual ideology. She should have put attacks in that as well, but, you know, because it makes it seem like it's commendable that we're attacking the family. It's like, wait, what? And then biblical positions that Christians largely support. So even that paragraph that I quoted is very poorly written.
Yeah, I mean, it should be in a list.
Yeah, but yeah, and if you're going to list out the things, you should have the opposition and spelled out, but instead, yeah, we're not attacking biblical positions. But scratch the surface of the Christian morality speeches and the picture grows darker, although the factual details are too voluminous to list here. This movement as a whole is gaining well-earned reputation for politically intolerant authoritarianism, white nationalism / kinism. Why is kinism capitalized? Hostility towards Jewish people in Israel, and advocacy against the U.S. Constitution's guarantees of free speech, a woman's right to vote, and even religious liberty, except for themselves. So there's a lot of scary buzzwords there, like, you know, social justice terms like anti-Semitism and liberal causes such as women's suffrage, which is a liberal cause. If you look at the U.S. Constitution, Amendment 16 through 19 for sure. I don't know how liberal gets in the 20s, in the early 20s, but those are all called the progressive amendments because they were extremely progressive. You got the 16th Amendment income tax. You got the 17th Amendment, you know, direct election to the senators, which was terrible for this country. And then you had the 18th Amendment, which was the ultimate longhouse amendment of, you know, the Karens are taking over. They don't have the right to vote, but the Karens took over with the 18th Amendment. They were in control. And then the 19th Amendment, which was women's suffrage. All those amendments shifted this country dramatically to the left, and it's hard going back. So it's been a hard time coming back. So with that said, she's clearly supporting previous stages of liberalism.
Oh, I mean, keep in mind, I mean, the U.S. Constitution's guarantees of free speech. I mean, I'm pretty sure the Christian nationalist denies that there even is a guarantee of free speech in practice. I mean, you got like Joel Webbin, who will say it's not whether there are blasphemy laws, it's which blasphemy laws are enforced. So the idea is that there's really no such thing as free speech in and of itself.
Okay, so...
Or even just the idea that authoritarianism... I mean, again, if you look throughout most of human history, you know, democracy was frowned upon.
And the other thing to look at is that we have more government now than any high crown authority monarchy did. So she counts off the five throats of Christian nationalism, identity politics. She says that the woke left stresses political activities that focus on the concerns of a particular group's divided by identity, such as race or sex. The woke right does this. So she's trying to go with the woke right narrative, by the way. Basing its propositions for America almost solely on the concerns of white American Christians, particularly males. So are there propositions for America, or does she mean that basing policy proposals? I don't, you know, because Christian nationalism opposes the whole proposition nation as a concept or premise. But anyway, I basically said, you know, she's too old to not see how identity politics is inescapable. You've touched on this earlier this year. John Harris just did a major column at it over at American Reformer.
I mean, so, yeah. And let me briefly touch on the differences, because John Harris pretty much says that you can't rely on universal truths in order to combat identity politics. That's kind of the major theme of his article, which you can find over at American Reformer. That would be kind of the central argument. And we both kind of relate how Trump tapped into American identity in a way that Mitt Romney didn't, in a way that John McCain didn't. And guess what? Donald Trump won in 2016 because he tapped into identity. I pretty much say that you have to use identity to actually make appeals and inroads. So even if you were trying to do minority outreach, you're still better off using identity politics to actually win over black voters that should be voting for you, or even to make inroads with Hispanic voters. Or better yet, you can appeal to men of other races by simply appealing to masculinity. So, I mean, it's not just, oh, you use identity politics only to represent the white people of America, even though the white evangelicals are the lone bulwark, but you're also using it, you're also appealing to someone else's identity to win over their vote.
Yeah, so I basically point out how all politics, you know, especially in a republic or some sort of, you know, all politics is identity politics. And we can see this in the days of Julius Caesar. We can see this in the Delian League. This is what being in a republic creates. And we basically pretended that we are above the rules of politics. The natural rules of politics that is basically identity politics is a natural rule. And we pretended that we've been above it. And that pretend, this role playing has cost the right a lot, that we've kind of lost our identity by trying to deny, we've denied our identity so long as a people that we've lost it almost. And I kind of highlight the arguments that you've made in the articles, you know, John Harris's article as well. Janet Mefford's attempting to operate above the rules of politics and has and will continue to fail. So she really wants to go with the woke right concept. Her second fruit is the Mott and Bailey fallacy. And she writes, on the woke right, the Mott is stating Christian moral concerns. Christian nationalist Bailey is a proposal to put heretics to death or install a Christian Franco, a popular rallying cry on Christian nationalist social media. It is largely kept out of view, but when it's put forward and there's pushback, its leaders beat a hasty retreat to cries for Christian morality. And I don't actually see this, especially on the Christian Franco example. I think a lot of people, you know, just openly support the Christian Franco and they don't really retreat from that premise.
Yeah, I don't think
the leaders are retreating from that.
I mean, the people that are saying Christian Franco or Protestant Franco they're not exactly retreating from that. Or even if their retreat might be a pivot to, we want Trump to actually, you know, be what the left feared him to be. I mean, again, when I read Stephen Wolfe's book, I immediately thought of Trump as the Christian prince, not because Trump lived up to that. It's just because that was the perception of what he could have been.
And what we wanted him to be. Like, I wanted him to be a Caesarian figure. He wasn't.
Yeah.
That's my issue with Trump.
He kind of put on the costume, but, you know, he put on the costume to play Julius Caesar in a play, not exactly,
I know,
Shakespeare's Julius Caesar, not, you know, historical Julius Caesar.
And, you know, at the end of the day, they went after Caesar because he was competent in his job and he, you know, conquered all of Gaul and stuff like that. So that got him a lot of enemies. But Donald Trump got all of that without actually conquering Gaul. That's the frustration there. But he's not the Christian prince that was promised, unfortunately. And I feel like the point that we just made here was better than what I actually wrote at like 1:30 last night. Next, Janet Mefford accuses Christian nationalists of doing the Mott-and-Bailey fallacy. And I say fallacy or not, it's an effective rhetorical device.
I mean, especially it's not even a fallacy, though.
Well, maybe regardless. It is in a philosophical sense, but who cares in the blood sport of politics? I certainly don't.
I mean,
but we're talking about ideas that are outside the Overton window. And I define the Overton window as socially acceptable discourse, because maybe not everyone knows what that means by now. There's a prudential factor at play, which Mefford ignores, as well as practicality. She conflates idealism with prudential proposals. So things like, you know, executing heretics, I think, is ideal. It's not exactly what we're going forward with now. It's not exactly a first step, but it is an ideal. And I don't think it's wrong to have ideals.
So. Oh, yeah. I mean, this is the whole problem with the incrementalism versus, you know, abolitionist debate on abortion is, you know, you got the incrementalists who, some of them, not all of them, not like the Smash Mouth people, but you got a certain band of incrementalists that don't actually want to eliminate abortion. They're just doing the national right to life mantra of, we'll just kind of virtue signal an end to abortion, versus the abolitionists who want to hardline on it. And, you know, at the end of the day, it is kind of the ideal versus, you know, the real. You have to take what you can get and then come back next year for more. I mean, even John Calvin writes about, you know, the king or the prince should actually enforce any part of the first table of the law that he can, or first and second table of the law. And if he can't, well, as long as he's pushing that ball into the right direction. I mean, he kind of takes like a Smash Mouth incremental approach, if it could be called that.
So the third one is the oppressor versus oppressed model. Here, the woke left may state, and often does, that the oppressor is the white male, while the oppressed are ethnic minorities. So that's critical race theory, by the way. For the woke right, the oppressor is a non-Christian woke left versus the oppressed white American Christians, mainly males. In both cases, the solutions is to reverse the oppressor and oppress via a payback-motivated power scheme. So here's what I said in response to that. It's like, I don't know how you argue that the government policies show sinful partiality against white men. So how do you argue that the government does not favor minorities over white men? You know, you have loan programs for minorities that you do not have for, you know, white people.
I mean, keep in mind.
Or white men especially, because there might be some women loan programs you can get from the government. So you don't, there are partialities written into our law, you know, that are specifically geared towards giving non-white men an advantage. Or how does one argue that we are not under oppression? How do you argue that? The founding fathers declared independence over far fewer grievances. And I'm invoking the founding fathers, because she's about to invoke a lot of, founding father language later in the article, correctly identifying the group largely responsible for the oppression and the lone bulwark fighting moral insanity in America is not by any means woke.
I mean, even going further, even if we were to take their oppressed model that the left puts out, if you look at what their solutions is, it's a never ending list of grievances. And, you know, what did they get? Civil Rights Act. Then they got the Great Society. Then they get, you know, affirmative action for the colleges. Now everyone has to get a college degree to get the same exact job that previous generations did not require a college degree to obtain. That's all because of the Civil Rights Act, because you can't have competency tests, because that's disparate impact. That's racism, which, regardless of, you know, whether that is or is not racism, which, you know, at the end of the day, to eliminate disparate impact, then you got to have anti-white oppression, more or less. I mean, the fact is that, you know, when the Fortune 100, 90% of their jobs go to non-white people, that's in a country that's still, as of right now, barely
majority white. That's messed up. That's not proportionate.
So I mean, what I thought was pretty interesting in here is that she talked about identity politics in the previous one, but yet despite the identity politics, what she lists as the oppressor versus oppressed model is not based in identity politics. She kind of equates it to, but she says that it is the non-Christian woke left. So there is an identity of non-Christian there, but those are largely ideological. Those aren't racial. Those aren't age. They're not really all that demographical, other than identities that you can choose or God chooses for you, versus the oppressed white American Christians. So that was pretty interesting that one side of the oppressor is not really an identity. It's a category unto itself. So I thought that she kind of, I'm kind of realizing now that she's kind of contradicting
her own argument. But even still, the left doesn't actually have a solution to what would resolve their oppressor oppressed conflict, because it needs to be perpetual. You know, the revolution is not meant to be won. It's meant to be, or the war is not meant to be won. It's meant to be continuous. Versus the right, the so-called right that she's accusing. I mean, what do they want? I don't know. Maybe the rollback of civil rights legislation. Again, these are tangible items, regardless of how possible they are, or overturning Obergefell. Deportation of mass immigrants, because again, immigration is a tool of oppression because it's a wealth transfer. So now, I mean, they want the jobs that should be going to them.
So yeah, feel free to send in the chat tonight, because this is going to be a pretty light, it's only going to get lighter from here, by the way. So anyone, Amanda says, anyone who says the leftist regime is not actively approaching the WASPs is gaslighting you. And I think that's true. And same Riza points out, you only need an associate's degree to become a certified public accountant. So fun fact, like I actually took most of the classes required to get a CPA in my 2-year college. And maybe I could have gone for that if I wanted to go into accounting. But that's not what I ended up doing. But yeah, I took most of those classes. I'm actually really good at accounting, by the way. So,
and a lot of these jobs, are they going to hire someone just because they got the CPA exam, or will they still say you need the degree? That's what the Civil Rights Act did.
Yeah. So, yeah.
And then again, debt is a form of oppression. That's really largely what the Bible calls oppression. So, you know, let justice roll like rivers. It is that.
Next part is pretty hilarious to me. A disdain for God-given freedoms. The woke left has no problem saving democracy through big tech censorship of conservatives or the suppression of legitimate news stories, which, by the way, you know, a lot of that was a confluence of big tech and big government, not necessarily big government policy.
I mean, can we at least, you know, praise her for acknowledging that those things are real?
No.
No.
But the Christian nationalists of the woke right have also argued against freedoms under their utopian political scheme, including stripping the vote from women and banning atheists from holding public office. So I just thought this was hilarious that Mefford invokes God-given freedoms to advocate for policies our founding fathers never instituted. They did not believe in universal suffrage, nor did the states allow atheists to hold public office. Her criticism against Christian nationalists are better directed against the signers of the Declaration of Independence.
I mean, this is the whole problem with the paradigm of, you know, God-given rights, God-given freedom. You know, what actually does come from God versus what actually comes from man. And the fact that she's invoking the right, that there is a right to vote that comes from God, is ridiculous, given that there's no voting in the Bible.
Well, and, except, you know, maybe, it's funny. Give us Barabbas.
Yeah, I mean, that's
that was a vote.
I mean, I guess you could say Matthias being an apostle, but
no, they gambled.
No, they casted lots.
They casted lots, so basically rolled the dice on who gets to become an apostle, like. They didn't take a straw poll. They didn't do any of that. There was no Robert's Rules of Order back then. So now the next part's where she really just outsources her argument. I think it's hilarious. It's the anti-Semitism scree. Radicals from the woke left have put their disdain for Jewish people and the nation of Israel on full display recently in the shocking pro-Hamas protests on college campuses, but anti-Semitism is also increasingly on prominent display from the woke right. Can I just say that, like, half of the protests that are pro-Hamas seem to be also led by Jewish people?
They're certainly funded by it. New York Post actually ran the story. George Soros, or really Alex Soros, was funding the groups that were basically feeding these people.
Yeah, you remember that meme when it was like Hamas was shooting rockets toward Israel? It was like the Iron Dome at work, and it's like my tax dollars at work, and then somehow also my tax dollars at work.
Yeah, because, you know.
And that's how I feel about, like, these protests. It's like, obviously, they're protesting the Jews. But it's like somehow also the Jews. I don't know how that works. That's crazy if you think about it, but it is kind of true. So this is basically what she says about it. Online, Torba criticizes. So she's talking about Andrew Torba, the Antichrist Jewish nation state called Israel, and has created a Hitler AI chatbot on Gab without Christian nationalist repudiation. Dozens of pro-Christian nationalism accounts on the same site regularly make anti-Semitic remarks. Blake Callens, author of the excellent book, which I endorse, The Case Against Christian Nationalism, also revealed extensive evidence that a church in Wilson's Creek denomination is rife with white nationalists. And I think they're talking about the church in Iowa, but again, I didn't have an issue with the people from Iowa that's being referenced there. But you notice how she just outsources the evidence for her claim. And the idea that, you know, if we look at Andrew Torba's AI, he created chatbots for a lot of historic characters, regardless of how controversial they are. If there's a Hitler one, do you know there's also a Patton one? So does that cancel out?
I mean, presumably all chatbot.
There's a chairman. I think there's a Malbot.
Presumably all chatbot would do is what? Take their historical writings and then produce a response based on that?
The Hitler chatbot is a fan of Erwin Rommel, by the way. I'm not really. I just don't really. I think he was an overrated general, but the Hitler bot does not agree.
Does the Hitler bot love dogs?
I've not asked it about dogs. So that's a weak sauce evidence against Andrew Torba. I said Andrew Torba created various chat box and users also created them. Is she too afraid to quote a saucy Torba post or for risk of being too base for her keyboard? Like, you know, she couldn't type out what Andrew Torba has actually said. Other than, like, the brief thing about the anti-Christ Jewish nation state called Israel. Like, is that really anti-Semitic or is that just a fact? But are we really going to cancel a Christian for saying that? Like, does not dispensationalist theology teach that a Jewish antichrist will emerge and lead the Jews?
I mean, the...
is that not what they believe?
Presbyterians talked about Rome being the antichrist.
Or does it have to be Nikolai Carpathio? Or is it Carpathia? Help me out here. You've seen the movie. So on this section, she does not continue, by the way. There's an abrupt end to this section. So Medford cites the astroturfed Blake Callens before jumping subject completely. She concludes the article by quoting Ronald Reagan. And I say that Christian Post should be embarrassed that they even published this BoomerCon lunacy. So, yeah, Yelomov says the original Westminster Confession said the Pope was the Antichrist. Checks out. Or are they more Whore of Babylon? So, yeah, the only reason I did this article was because Christian Post ran this. That is the only reason I did this. So, otherwise, I would have just let it be ignored, but I felt like Christian Post needed to get roasted. And I think you know, they irked me enough. And I wanted to write another article for today. So they got me. They got me. I took the bait. So any other ways to... So here's the thing about Janet Mefford. A lot of people might not know who she is. Back in the day, she had a radio show or something like that. I don't know whether she paid to have a radio show versus whether she was a talent on the radio or anything. But in any case, she used to have a radio show. She was kind of regime friendly, but she wanted to fight wokeness. You know, she would defend Al Mohler, particularly from a certain whistleblowers who we've talked about in the past. So she was not very friendly to whistleblowers who called out wokeness, particularly in the Southern Baptist Convention. So, but now she goes after people like William Wolfe because he went to Southern Seminary and is therefore connected to Al Mohler. So, I don't know. She's flip-flopped, and she and people like Michael O'Fallon, they would rather liberals keep dominating the Southern Baptist Convention than people who are outside of their sphere of influence save it. That is what they are. They would rather lose pretty than win ugly. And that is why white man can't jump.
Yeah, I mean, it's what happens when we outsource a lot of our thinking to classical liberals, or that we assume that, oh, wow, everything about America just perfectly aligns with the Bible. And you know, even though it really doesn't in many cases, including, you know, universal suffrage.
Yeah, I feel like our founding fathers would have abhorred the idea of universal suffrage. So our next part of the stream, we're going to be talking about Mr. Burcham and how I just feel like the Daily Wire is trying to set us back in the culture war with this nonsense. Now, I've not seen any of the Daily Wire Plus stuff. I do not have Daily Wire Plus. I will not be watching this TV show. And I just want to be clear. Now, I am a guy in my mid-20s-ish who has seen a lot of adult animation in my lifetime. It was a popular genre for a good 10 years. And I feel like everything now, like Netflix has tried to do a lot of adult animations. Very few of them have ever lasted. BoJack has probably been the most successful. And maybe there's a Bill Burr one that was also successful. I've never seen that one. I have seen BoJack, which literally had seasons. Like BoJack's literally the Netflix meme where, you know, after they eased you into it, then they would just throw a bunch of gay nonsense at you. And it would literally have like episode. They would literally have like two good episodes in a season. Then it would just do a... They would take a break and just do social justice episodes. Then they would do experimental episodes because we got to reinvent storytelling methods or whatever. And then they would get back on track with the main plot of the season. It's like, man, those were the days where Netflix was really being, or they were already being very propaganda-ish.
Well, it's one of them shows where it's just like, okay, you know, how long before it really inserts the message? Because I think, you know, BoJack at least did two good seasons without doing any of that.
Yeah, the third season, I watched the whole show twice, I think. And the third season was terrible until the end. And it's because they wanted to do, I don't know whether it was an abortion plot or I forget which one they did. But yeah, that season was actually really bad. But anyway, I feel like every single new adult animation show either wants to be Archer, Family Guy, or occasionally Rick and Morty. And Rick and Morty had like, you know, after I finished the third season of Rick and Morty, I'm like, yeah, okay, I really don't have a desire to see season four. And from what I've heard, season four onwards has been terrible. But... So they really fell off, and it was because it was a lot of midwit kind of thing. They got very high on their own supply and very kind of pretentious about what they were. They thought that they were more serious. They thought they were a more serious storytelling medium than they actually were. And I think maybe there's a disconnect, but I don't know. But anyway, if you look at the beginning here, this first frame, and I just kind of want to point it out, Like, this house looks like a cross between the Simpsons house and the Family Guy house. I don't know why I think.
I mean, the fact is,
they don't look alike, but I just feel like there's such a familiarity here. Maybe
no, this is what every TV animated house looks like. The garage generally on the right, obviously car in the driveway, sidewalk, suburban neighborhood, even the color, you know, has that, like, it's so generic. You can't even put the driveway on the left. Just for, like, at least to mix it up.
Okay, but seriously, how often is the garage on the left?
It depends on the neighborhood.
Okay.
But at least be creative.
It's not in Breaking Bad. So, I don't know. So, anyway, let's dive into this cringy trailer.
Yes! Headshot!
Dad, my teammates can see your junk.
You're welcome, ladies.
First day of school means the bet is on.
First one of us to get in so.
You suck, Mr. Butt Chump.
Ah, deal got it.
Rule number one, no phones in the woodshop. Fish it out after class.
I found some really great school uniform options to avoid misgendering.
Ooh, what about their allergies? Maybe those days could be lactose intolerant.
So I got to point this out. This guy looks like that meme from back in the day.
What, man bun dude? Or...
Yes. Does he not look like the meme?
I'd have to actually see the meme. But
there's like a Soy Jack man bun meme. So anyway, and then I have a lot of problems with the main character here.
No, we can't say intolerance. We have a zero tolerance policy for mentioning intolerance.
When I was a kid, men were men. Now everyone's wrapped up in feelings.
Real men stuff feelings down with red meat, cigarettes, and violence.
My name is Mr. Wolf. I solve problems.
You know what it takes? Balls. Eyeballs.
He's gonna say that we're too young.
Well, actually, I was gonna say you're too fat.
Okay, so let's just read the voice cast real quick. Adam Carolla, who I'm told is big, but I've never actually, you know, known him from anything.
He does like a show on Daily Wire as well. So he's kind of like one of their people.
I was told he was like the biggest podcaster ever. And I'm like, he's not Joe Rogan. This is obviously not true. Megyn Kelly is in the show. Alonzo Bodden, Tyler Fisher, Brett Cooper's in the show because she's reviving her acting career. Rob Riggle, Patrick Warburton, isn't he the baritone voice guy?
I believe so. At least he's actually done work.
Okay, so they got like, and then Kyle Dunnigan was in the recent Netflix roast of Tom Brady, correct?
I don't know.
Or no, he was in the Seinfeld movie. He was in the Pop-Tart movie on Frosted, right? Yeah. So Jay Moore and then Sage Steele, who I don't know why she's a thing. Danny Trejo and Roseanne Barr, who I think has a very annoying voice, but that's probably why she's in adult animated.
Keep in mind, how big are these voice actors going to be within the show? Especially the latter two at the end.
Well, I think Megyn Kelly would be a hard person to keep as a recurring, as a main character.
So are they just using their names early on to sell it, and then but they're not the main cast, so it could be a bait and switch if you just looked at the cast.
Carella was on The Man Show. I don't know The Man Show. Does that, you know, speak ill of me? I don't know. So, and actually, this is actually the funniest part of the trailer we're about to play right now.
Wife's name out of your damn mouth.
You and the geriatric Girl Scouts will be passed out in an hour.
Pass mommy the wine. The bottle.
Don't make this a prison hug.
Richard Burcham.
Burcham?
Burcham.
Mr. Burcham.
Hey, Burcham.
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 Watch Mr. Burcham, an all-new animated series from Daily Wire Plus.
So.
Let the record show I'm a dick.
Premieres May 12th.
So that is now published, and the reviews have been bad thus far. Just from the review aggregators I've seen, it was like middle of the road, which is terrible for a TV show. So I have a lot of thoughts on this. And the thing that I tweeted out from my personal account was that they did the entire thing wrong. And that was that they basically had every character play into what they were. The most obvious stereotype. You know what I'm saying? So Mr. Bertram, the woodshop teacher, is the ultra conservative, not really all that conservative, really. He's just going to be a boomer con. And they have the woodshop teacher be the boomer con. And I don't know what the man bun guy was. I don't know what he was a teacher for, but you know, there's nothing surprising about that. And there's nothing ironic or funny about that. So I basically said, they just got this entire thing wrong. Would it not have been funnier had they made the woodshop teacher woke and they made the theater teacher the right wing person? They made
have him be an English teacher instead. Well,
again, he teaches theater and is, you know, right wing about it. That would have been far funnier had they flipped the premise, but they don't understand comedy. And that's what's kind of sad about this. Like, maybe Adam Carolla was a comedian. Like, how does he not get this?
Well, it's not about comedy. It's arrogance. That's what it is. This is the same thing with Lady Ballers, where they're just being smug. They're just being arrogant. They're just being like, ha, 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 we're laughing at the lefties.
No, the thing about Lady Ballers was Lady Ballers could have been funny, but they didn't get the talent for it.
Well, yeah, but that's like saying if you take out all the bad things and, like, you know, have good writing, good actors, good ad-libbing, good chemistry on set. Like, if you have all the things that make a good movie, then it could have been a good movie.
I mean, I realize that I just said yes to all of that. But if they had, I don't want to say Will Ferrell, but they needed someone like Will Ferrell.
Yeah, that's actually...
like someone who can improvise lines. They needed that person to do that movie. Someone who was a professional, not some Daily Wire hack. So, and that's not what they did with Lady Ballers. And because they didn't do that, the movie was poorly received.
Also, I heard it was too long. Like, that's really? Like a 90-minute comedy.
It's 90 minutes.
I think Trinker said it was too long. When in
Yellowmouth says Will Ferrell isn't funny anymore. I agree with that. Even at the roast of Brady, he wasn't that good.
He wasn't.
But here's the thing about, he was funny.
But I mean, like, even if he's just playing Jackie Moon.
Yeah, exactly. So I had a tweet about this. Maybe I'll just read it. And I put it in response to a Nick Fuentes tweet because I guess was trying to be spicier about it. So it would have been funnier how they flipped the premise. And instead, Daily Wire is putting out banal, predictable content that panders to its audience. And I noted that even South Park, during their bad seasons, knew to make PC Principal a tough guy to make his views ironic with his appearance. So you're familiar with that character. Came out during a terrible season run of South Park, because South Park, they just, like,
once they started continuous story arcs, then they fell off.
Right, and that's when they introduced PC Principal.
Yeah, that's like, I guess, 2015 for reference.
So even they knew to make him a tough guy that was ironic with his appearance. He's a frat bro and all this other stuff. So that made his character funnier, even though the rest of the show wasn't really funny. So, and then someone else says, you know, looking forward to the Nick Fuentes character that all the right wing woodshop students listen to. Someone else had something funny to say about this, and I thought it was actually pretty insightful, but I guess they're hiding it or hiding the reply or something. But basically someone's had a pretty insightful thing to say about the storytelling that, and what they should have done with regards to this, you know, how they format the comedy. Something about them being a theater teacher trying to upstart the program, but, you know, they're trying to fight the system in order to tell art. Like, they're trying to tell real art and real stories in theater.
So, again, even an English teacher that would allow you to incorporate a lot of English works into your writing, which, again, if you look at how comedy writers did comedy back in the day, these people were well-read. They actually knew Shakespeare. They actually could reference, like, great American novels. or even just incorporate short story, great American short stories into their work.
Silent films.
Go back to the
stuff like that.
Go back to the early Simpsons episodes, and they're referencing, or especially their Treehouse of Horror, where they're doing like Monkey's Paw type stuff, or they're doing
the Raven, or
even like Seinfeld, where Seinfeld literally did black and white movies. Like, they were well versed, and this is just cheap. This is just cheap own the libs humor.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I believe the Simpsons, the comedians behind that were writing for the Simpsons were like PhDs, like they were actually really smart. And really well educated. That's back when, you know, being an elite meant that you were actually, you know, elite. But nowadays, you know, you can get any. Yeah, exactly. Same as I was saying, the man bun guy should have been the Christian nationalist. Again, make their appearances ironic with their views. That's funnier. It just is. The Simpsons writers all went to Harvard. Yeah, exactly. Like, they weren't dumb.
Now, the other thing to do, and again, I'm not even sure I like the premise of doing a public school, but I mean, if
it's like, also a public school in Florida, so it makes me, or the palm trees. I saw the palm trees there and I forgot to bring that up in the first shot. So it might even be a public school in Florida, which means they're going to reference Ron DeSantis in the Don't Say Gay or something like that.
But I mean, like, where's the show that's kind of like a King of the Hill? Like, that's a void that could have been filled, because it's not necessarily raunchy comedy or going edgelord, but it's a show that's funny, but it's also about the American life. Like, where's the show that's the next King of the Hill, which is a better show than Simpsons, which is a better show than it's a better show than Family Guy. Even you could argue even better than South Park.
Family Guy, you know, this. The thing is, like, Family Guy set animation back in a lot of ways because they were much simpler. Like, a 10-year-old could draw a Family Guy character. So Family Guy in that way set animation back.
Well, yeah, everyone's using the same animation style as well as Family Guy.
So,
or Rick and Morty, they're all using the same.
Rick and Morty's at least a little bit more complicated than Family Guy. But yeah, it's too recognizable, and for that reason, I don't like it. But... you know, Family Guy was ever well received. Simpsons was like a darker version of the Bill Cosby show in a way. It showed it was meant to show a more realistic and gritty version of the American family experience that was less happy, you know, more downtrodden in a way, but it was also more downtrodden because of bad personal decisions. You know, mainly by Homer, because he's not good with money. He's not good with personal responsibility, and Ned Flanders is. So they had the Keeping Up with the Joneses kind of thing going on there. And you got to see that in that dynamic. Now, Simpsons has definitely gone downhill. But let's go back to the King of the Hill that you bring up in the example.
Because, again, that's a show where the man of the house is the smartest character on the show.
But he's also, despite his appearance, very masculine appearance, he's very timid at times. And so there's like a disconnect that leads to a lot more funny situations.
Or just, you know, it's real. Like, you know, you have four dudes that stand in the, I guess, the alleyway, and they're just like, yep. Like, that's real. And that's what makes that funny.
So, and I just feel like they don't understand comedy. And there's all this talk about the death of comedy, and we're going to be the ones to bring comedy back. Look at Netflix and what they're doing right now. I feel like they're actually bringing comedy back. The roast of Tom Brady. That was one of the most politically incorrect specials that I've ever seen. In modern era, for sure. You know, I've seen Eddie Murphy's Delirious and all that. But that was one of the most politically incorrect things. And it was hilarious. And Netflix put it on. The Daily Wire is like, oh, we're going to make non-woke comedy. Well, Netflix just did make non-woke comedy. It made fun of wokeness. They made fun of Netflix for all their quotas. Like, their comedians went after Netflix hardcore. And it worked. They made politically incorrect comedy. Ironically, Christians weren't really made fun of in the special. You know? They made fun of they made fun of a lot of other things. Jews got made fun of a lot because of Julian Edelman. But they didn't you know, it was pretty funny. A lot of crude jokes, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's a vulgar time. And again, you know,
when, it's a little vulgar for sure.
I try to think about, okay, if I were to bring this up at the workplace, what jokes could I repeat?
And it was kind of like that, but they did politically incorrect comedy at Netflix. And then they followed that up with the Unfrosted movie, which is Jerry Seinfeld's movie. Now, Jerry Seinfeld's made a lot of headlines recently because during the promotion for this movie, Unfrosted, he talked about how the woke left has killed comedy. He talked about how liberals have killed comedy. And he talked about Larry David being exempt from that because he's so old that he basically wrote the rules. So he made a lot of headlines for that. He said on like New York Public Radio Hour or something like that. And people went after him for that. And one way they went after him for that was like trying to go after the Pop-Tart movie that he made. But then we watched the Pop-Tart movie and it's like, I actually thought it was pretty good. It was non-woke, and it was actually we're going after everyone kind of comedy. Like, they made fun of January 6th in a very extended bit, and I thought it worked, and it actually trivialized what January 6th really was. It trivialized it, and I thought that was pretty hilarious. And here's another unpopular take. Melissa McCarthy was a co-star, and I actually think Melissa McCarthy is a good actress, which might be my most surprising take all night. But first of all, she can do a serious role. I have to wonder, is this because she had to make up for Ghostbusters 2016, or is, you know, did she like learn from that mistake, or is Ghostbusters 2016 just why we don't recognize how talented she otherwise would be?
I mean, she did kind of become a one horse pony or,
but she, pony. No, she can do a serious role.
Yeah. Though.
So she actually can. Melissa McCarthy may or may not be a good actress, but for sure she isn't funny. I think with good directing, she can be funny. She was not funny in. I thought she was good for the role. Even Amy Schumer, I didn't think was bad in Unfrosted. And I don't think Amy Schumer's all that funny at all. So. And she's also related to a certain Chuck in the U.S. Senate. So non-woke comedy is kind of back at Netflix. Is kind of like the headline. And then the Daily Wire is coming out with this. So it kind of goes back to the whole idea that right-wing media wants to grift its audience as far as it can. We, you know, we want to milk our audience for money. And I say we as a collective we. I'm not milking you guys for money. I do have an upcoming book, but that's all been a part of the game of right-wing media space is the books. But we're talking beyond the books when it's like private label coffee, Harry's or Jeremy's razors.
Well, and any of those.
Jeremy's chocolate. It's all private label stuff. You just slap your name on someone else's product. And maybe that someone else is some sort of woke corporation operating in, you know, China or something like that. You don't really know what the product, you know, the people who actually made the product and what they believe and what you're actually really supporting.
Or like,
because they just put private label.
Or like ultra right beer. Or there's some kind of MAGA beer, which did the calendar with Riley Gaines.
Riley Gaines in the calendar. Exactly. We're going to do a pinup calendar, but so poorly executed because we don't understand sexy. You know, we're trying to be provocative and we're trying to, you know, basically get a bunch of ethots to do a calendar shoot, and we can't even do that right. Like, they could have taken a better selfie for their Instagram than what was provided in that calendar. But, you know, what was it? Ultra Conservative Dad's Ultra MAGA Beer or whatever it was called.
Something like that.
Something I would never drink because it's a beer below 5%. And I really rarely make exceptions for that, for the 5% cutoff line. And Guinness might be one of those exceptions because I think technically it's under that. But, you know, I have to make exceptions for that. But anyway, this is kind of how conservative media operates. And if you remember that, was it who was the guy that did it? Was it J.P. Sears that did the whole
Yes.
Right-wing advertisers versus left-wing advertisers, and the left-wing advertisers.
Or that might be it. Might have been Ryan Long.
Ryan Long. I wanted to say JP Long, but that wasn't right. Ryan Long, who did that bit. I think you're right. It was Ryan Long, where, you know, left liberals are advertised by McDonald's, Ford, Disney, Apple, and then Pfizer, of course. And then right wing is like Patriot Water, because everybody needs to drink water. But it's all just private label products or vitamin. I don't think the vitamins and supplements are bad, but a lot of that stuff could get into multi-level marketing territory, if you know what I'm saying. Confirmation in chat that was Ryan Long. I do want to make sure we give credit where credit is due on these things, because comedy deserves credit. I mean, a lot of jokes are stolen or parallel thinking around here. Memes don't really exist unless they're stolen. So credit where credit is due for the most part. But we got to change that dynamic, I feel like, as a movement. I'm fine with selling books. I'm fine with selling, you know, subscriptions to support news outlets and stuff like that. Obviously, the stuff that I do, I'm fine with. But I think we're not going to win the culture war by trying to create a parallel economy of private label products.
Oh, yes and no.
Is that a nice distinction to make?
I think we can narrow it down to specifically, we're not going to create a culture where we're creating private label art or private label entertainment. Because that's specifically what we're talking about. Is you're not like having your own paywall, your studio that's behind a paywall with your Bentke children's programming, or even, you know, this show.
Which looked like a knockoff of Bluey, by the way.
And even their movies, like, again, you have to act. Are you just creating a private label product for your subscribers, or are you actually interested in, you know, competing with Hollywood? Because they, again, Jeremy Boring, I mean, again, a lot of the Daily Wire guys are just people that couldn't make it in Hollywood, so they went into conservative media, and Jeremy Boring being one of them. Yeah, her another. And I think Matt Walsh and Michael Knowles were even actors at one point, but they didn't make it in Hollywood. Steven Crowder, another one. They didn't make it in Hollywood, so they transitioned to the media. And instead of like competing with even getting your shows on Netflix, like, would Netflix like be so adamant against putting a Daily Wire show onto their platform, or Amazon, for instance? But instead,
hot take, what about Angel Studios?
Yeah, I mean,
what do you think, that's beyond the line or not?
That show would never be on Angel Studios.
I'm saying in general. You're saying that Daily Wire should be producing content, not distributing it, right?
Pretty much. And actually competing. Like, have your show on Netflix. Have your show competing against all the other shows on Netflix. And if it's number one on Netflix for like a week, then you actually succeed.
Or and have, I think, Lady, right, Ball, because
number one. I mean, that, again, that's how you win.
You win by beating them on their turf, gaining ground, or taking their market share. You haven't taken Netflix's market share. You haven't taken Amazon's market share. You haven't taken, I mean, HBO Max's market share hasn't gone down. Paramount Plus might be the wokest of the streaming service. You haven't taken their market share, and they're much less successful. So I think you're right. And I feel like a lot of these people should have been working on building content rather than trying to build a streaming platform. Daily Wire already had a streaming platform. They just add on more to it. So I don't blame them for that part. But, you know, people wanted to make a Christian streaming platform. And it's like, how about you guys just make the content? Don't worry about distributing. Make it for someone else to distribute. Even HBO Max, HBO or Warner Brothers, I should say, they will make content for Netflix to distribute because they just want to make money. So same rise says Lore TV is superior to Daily Wire. And it's like, I might agree if they made content. So that'd be my hot take. Lore should have been making content for, in my opinion, they should have been making content for Netflix or for the movie theaters, taking advantage of when the writers were on strike. They should have been striking while the iron's hot. Like, that was their opportunity to make content that can go into theaters. They should have been focused on making content, not making a platform.
Because Netflix has had a good resurgence this year. I mean, if you look at what the lineup of content they've actually produced, it's been good. Like, I actually do think Netflix is somewhat, I won't say somewhat putting the woke away, but at least somewhat, you know, not putting all their eggs in that basket, at least. And that's...
I mean, the Netflix meme of casting a white character as black or a black woman is not going to die. And that hasn't died. They did the Cleopatra thing this year, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they're doing everything, anything and everything, but they actually have came out with good content this year, which I'm kind of shocked. The biggest thing being The Gentlemen, which is Guy Ritchie.
They also have the Adam Sandler movie, because Adam Sandler is actually a good actor, by the way. I mean, that's that really shouldn't be controversial. He can do good acting. He just does whatever movie he wants.
But I mean, take this for instance. The Bentke show or whatever being a knockoff of Bluey. I'm sure Netflix would pay for a knockoff of Bluey, given that Disney Plus has that show. And that's like their biggest show.
Bluey?
It's like one of them because they bought the rights.
I'm going to be honest. As a father, I could not get into Bluey. I can't get into it. I don't like the dad character. I don't really like Bluey. You know what my hot take on children's television is? Paw Patrol sucks. It is the worst. It literally rewards retarded behavior, and I can't stand that. Like, the Dalmatian on the show is literally retarded and is rewarded for it. I cannot stand that Dalmatian.
Is it smarter than Rob Gronkowski?
No. No. I can't stand Paw Patrol. It is the worst. It is not well written. It is poor quality. And it's the same concept as every other kids show in the last 20 years of a rescue squad. They just did it with dogs instead of hamsters. So unoriginal. Oh, they had a non-binary character on Paw Patrol. So I don't, you know, Paw Patrol is not on at my house. Just saying. And
I think that was a recent thing, but yes.
But I've seen enough. I'm like, this show sucks. And they made the movie. They made a big thing out of it. It's like, Daily Wire can't come up with something, you know, that's not a knockoff of Bluey, but better than Paw Patrol. The point of art isn't to make money. And yes and no, I guess. I mean, there was a time when art was sponsored by rich patrons, and rich patrons sponsored art. So art wasn't actually meant to make money back in those days. It was meant to demonstrate power, actually. The Medicis wanted to fund artists to show how powerful, and it was about prestige back then. So, and then the U.S. Constitution does allow for the government to fund arts and science projects. For, you know, the same reason. I believe that's in, what, Article 1, right? Article 1, Section 7 or 8. So, in any case, I'm not opposed to, you know, I don't want to say I'm not opposed to government art. I kind of would be it these days, for sure. But,
yeah, it's all statues of...
Right. Weird. So, anyway... Yelma says Daily Wire is just starting out. There will be a learning curve. They could improve if they make good decisions.
I would disagree, because generally the problem is, and this is the artist dilemma, is your first project is your best project, and you're always chasing, you're always trying to top your original work. Like,
is that really how is that an artist dilemma? Because I'm trying to think of what
I don't know if it's really I don't know what to actually call it, but it's like, you know, Beethoven's earlier work is better, is more regarded
than George Lucas' work. Is George Lucas really going to say his work before Star Wars was better?
Well, maybe not, but like it. But you know, the earlier albums of any band are more highly regarded than their later albums, even though they might disagree. So I kind of disagree, because like your first show has to be a hit. Otherwise people just don't believe in the concept. And that's kind of the problem, is they just wanted to make content to make content, not like this person had a really good idea and we believe in them And even though we're not really an art distribution, we're not really a content creating company, we're just going to back this project because we believe in it.
And what's Spielberg, though? Yeah, that is kind of interesting because, you know, he made Jaws was one of his first movies. And then he got, and Yellowmouth points out, he got better in the 90s and then dropped off later. Yeah, James Cameron would be another one. I don't know if he's chasing as high or not, but, you know, he's definitely chasing something with Avatar.
They're able to get there because they actually produced a really great movie for, I won't say a budget, with very limited resources. And then, you know, the great stuff in the 90s for, like, Spielberg would still have money behind it.
He probably peaked with Saving Private Ryan. Okay. I think Saving Private Ryan's a little overrated, but, you know.
That is a big budget movie compared to Jaws.
It's not my favorite. Yeah, it's not my favorite war movie, let alone World War II. So, what happened to Ethan Nicole? Do you know who this is? No. Daily Wire, didn't Daily Wire pick him up after Babylon Bee axed him? His cartoons were dope.
Like, yeah, there you go. A Babylon Bee-sponsored satire show.
I don't know how well that would work, but...
At least Babylon get the Babylon Bee to write it.
And I feel like the Blaze should have done this with, instead of doing Normal World as a daily podcast, they should have just made it like a Saturday Night Live or In Living Color, maybe might be a better comparison. They should have just done it like that and have like a Norm MacDonald style of reading the news. So, those are just my thoughts. So I want to move on to meme review. Because we got a lot of memes to review about this, because the Bertram Show became a meme. I don't know if you knew this, Anthony.
I have seen some.
Okay, well, get prepared, because I got some memes to share. I first want to get high on my own supply, though. If I can find my own supply to get high on. So, with that said, let me get to my media. So here we go. Of course, I support Israel. They are our greatest ally.
Are you sharing?
I am not sharing. I am sharing now. So it's like, of course, I support Israel. They are our greatest ally. And it's basically, they've turned this guy into like the BoomerCon that will just say BoomerCon talking points.
I mean, I'll give him credit for like the iHeart.
That's me that made this, by the way.
The iHeart Wood, which is like a subtle, you know, gay joke. But,
well, yeah, that's part of the Daily Wire's thing. And then we have, I did this one as well because I'm trying to touch on millennial experiences here. It's an entry level job that requires 3 years of experience. So I just think the meme, does that look like the guy that would say that?
Yes and no. He's kind of, I mean, there's a lot of like boomerisms he would say. He's the guy that would say like, oh, well, the interest rates were higher in the 80s than they are now.
Right.
And try to say that, oh, you didn't struggle like I had to struggle with regards to the housing market.
Right. So I actually kind of want to read the replies to this one. It's like, I love this one. The entire concept of an entry level job is a scam to sanctimoniously justify paying employees slave wages. Hard work and a firm handshake that got me my first job. And then you will be required to work overtime, but you will be on salary. And it's just like, these people get it. I did another one. We have to fight them over there or we'll fight them over here. So this is, you know, the justification that was the talking point for the war in Afghanistan and the war in Iraq. We fight them over here, over there, so we don't have to fight them over here, because the Atlantic and the Pacific Oceans are going to be traversed by the terrorist. So what do you think about that one?
I mean, yeah. I mean, this got
a lot of love on the Twitter sphere.
This is the, I mean, yeah, he's the embodiment of the neocon boomer con that, you know, voted for Bush twice. And
I have this one. This is a throwback, by the way. Millennials could own their own houses if they didn't spend all their money on avocado toast. This is like a throwback to some article that wrote that very headline, give or take. And that was the day finding out about that article that got ratioed on Twitter like a decade ago. That was when I found out that avocado toast was a thing. And I got to say, as a millennial, I like it. I kind of like it. And I'm not ashamed to admit that.
I can't or won't afford it.
I mean, avocados are not in season. I wait until the avocados get very cheap at the grocery store. Nope. And then, okay, that's the one I just did. So last one I got, So last one I got, and we're going to go to bookmarks for the meme review. The Democrats have gone too far this time. People are waking up. That's from Dark Lord Raven, who's a Lone Bulwark member, by the way. So I absolutely love that one. This one came up recently by William Swallows, who's the White Boy Summer Meme King, by the way. As we gear up for White Boy Summer, all of the most attractive transgender people are conservatives. And there was a recent thing on Twitter about this, by the way. Someone like literally was making this argument.
I mean, yeah, it's the fact, the sad part is it's real. It's not even, I heard Blair White. I'll give it, I got to give it points for the extra detail.
The extra attention to detail. And yes, and Blair White does not pass, by the way. Anyone saying that is a homosexual. Steven Crowder. And then the Mallard Reborn. Am I Hank Hill or Ron Swanson? Both and neither. I am a desperate attempt to make right-coded comedy, but there's nothing actually right-wing or funny about me. I'm just a cash grab in the end. Subscribe today to Daily Wire Plus.
I mean, yeah, it's kind of like the Honest Trailers review of Mr. Bertram.
Yeah, and I don't know why I'm trying to read that in a J.K. Simmons impression. I think that's giving it way too much credit. This is the latest Stone Toss.
Yeah, I saw this one. This is good.
PETA, there's a man at the door, and it's like basically Family Guy, by the way, a Family Guy sketch. PETA, there's a man at the door that wants to talk to you about Israel, and it's Mr. Bertram. And then Peter just opens the door and closes it and walks away disgusted or suspicious or something. Like, the latest in Crusader Pepe. If it doesn't directly impact you, it's none of your business.
Gotta love that. Again, classical liberalism.
Classical liberalism.
Never fails.
Never. He had a bunch of them, by the way. Oh, here we go. This one's making fun of the Dispies. And Ben from Ben Zeisloft. Why polish brass on a sinking ship? The rapture will happen in the next 10 years.
I love it. He's roasting his former employer, too. Take that, Jeremy Boring, who trashed him on Twitter.
I do have some memes for meme review that were not related to this that I just have had in the on deck for a week. This is another Stone Toss comment. Stone Toss cartoon where it's like, you know, F white people. And it's like a Jew leading a bunch of minorities to say F white people. And then he's like whistling as he walks away, thinking that he's going to be immune to it. I thought that was hilarious. And then from Sovereign Bra. Chase. So, and it's the scene from Pirates of the Caribbean, the first one. You best start believing in Jewish conspiracy theories, Miss Turner. You're in one.
I didn't realize Black Peril. I didn't realize Sovereign Prab was that much of a noticer.
Yes, he is. He's a little. He's interesting because he's like very much a believer in like Israel's prophetic significance, but he swears that he's not dispensationalist. I think it's a little inconsistent, but.
So almost like a Doug Wilson inconsistency, or just like someone that's on the fence because he's not entirely sure why it is or is not.
Right said Fred says all religions are fundamentally the same. And yeah, I could see that. And it's like, there are so many boomer conisms just to be had there. Yeah, I would agree with that about Chase. He's mature politically, but he's a newer Christian. Yeah.
But again, that like Chase would be the guy that if Daily Wire wanted to go out and like hire content creators, that would be instant successes on their network. That would be him. But obviously, for obvious reasons, they're not going to.
It's interesting because you'd think he would be up the blazes alley for sure. They love taking chances on people. Like they had John Doyle on for a time. I don't know if he's still a contributor at the Blaze. Aaron McIntyre they picked up, and that was an excellent snag. Like absolute amazing snag there by the Blaze. I don't know if it makes up financially for, you know, taking the hit on Alex Stein. I had to remember his name. You know, cause they took a hit. They're definitely losing money on that deal, but nonetheless, or if they're making money, they ain't making views. So he's already too big for the Blaze. No, that's not true. There's a lot of conservative. There's a lot of market share out there that a lot of people.
Mind, he goes into the red pill stuff.
Right.
So he's the Blaze could get a huge foothold there. And obviously, like Daily Wire's having Brett Cooper do a lot of that stuff.
Yeah. The Blaze won't hire public noticers. Aaron has to hide it. And he hit it pretty well on the John Harris interview. I don't know if you watched Aaron on John Harris, where he talked about in-group preference. He talked about this.
Yes.
He was doing some noticing when he was talking about in-group preference.
And keep in mind, I'd
love to see that.
I mean, Aaron McIntyre speaking at the Old Glory Club. And I mean, they, yeah, I mean, you know, let's just say a lot of those people, I'm one of those people. But yeah, let's just say, yeah, they're not exactly the Glenn Beck crowd or the Daily Wire crowd.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I think Glenn Beck actually, you know, he holds back a lot of conservative content. Like Steve Dace's Nefarious movie would have been a letter grade higher had they not done the Glenn Beck scene. Straight up. He undermined that entire movie. Straight up. He was the Zendaya. Zendaya did to Dune 2 what Glenn Beck did to Nefarious.
Now he's holding back Jason Whitlock.
Exactly. He's blocking Jason Whitlock. It is a very expensive price to have Vodi Bakum at a conference. That is an A-lister. Comes with a high price. Just does.
I like how the Blaze sent out an email how they're offering promo codes for Whitlock's conference, and it's like $100 off a $5,000 VIP. It's like, really?
$5,000?
The VIP package, like the ultimate package for the conference, is $5,000, but, you know, use this promo code, $100 off. And then, like, a $500 breakfast is, like, $50 off, which it's ridiculous.
So, Bishop says, Freedom Tunes still holds the crown for in conservative media. Conservative Inc. Media. I'm going to do a last call for questions. And I also have a major announcement. So I won't show what the major announcement is, but I'm at least going to tell it to the audience. So the upcoming book that I have, Winning Not Winsome, I have seen the cover for it and it is based. It is amazing. And I absolutely love the work that I did. And I told the rep to pass along my compliments to the artist who did that. Absolutely good work. The font is stylistically myself. The image is very based on the cover. It is, the cover is one of the most important parts of a book because it helps you sell copies, for sure. Boniface Option had a very good cover on it. I'm trying to think of some other. Total State has a pretty good cover on
The little seeing eye.
Yeah, it is a good cover. It helps sell the book, and my cover. Mm-hmm. Also pretty good.
I mean, is it like Ben Garrison type with
No, it's a little closer to It's hard to say. It is closer to like a Giga Chad kind of vibe, though.
Or even Stephen Wolf's book had a great cover.
What's on the cover of that one?
That was just a cross. Like,
the cross in the America shape. That was excellent. Book covers are pretty important, and I like my book cover. Like, colors match my style as well. I really like it. And I don't have a release date yet. So we're under 90 days, but I don't know how much under 90 days we are. So I don't have the... I'll show the cover when it's ready, because right now it's like in a watermarked version, but it's good. So when I do a more official announcement with the release date, then everyone's going to see the cover. But we'll get there. We'll get there. So the cover is Ray doing the look of Blue Steel from Zoolander. Oh, man. I've seen Zoolander once, and it's enough to know that reference. Good job. Well done.
Throwback.
What kind of... So what kind of chips are those over your shoulder? I don't understand the question. Are you talking about that box there of coins? Would you ever interview Thomas 777? I don't know who that is.
I'm definitely down for that.
Who is that?
He's a historian.
Okay.
So this is the guy you would ask about anything, I guess, in the last 100 years. Pick the subject and he's.
Was he the guy that did the content on like the Francisco Franco?
He has done Spanish Civil War with Pete Quiñones. That's where I generally watch him. Does like a weekly show there. He's currently doing something on the foreign policy of one Adolf Hitler.
Yes.
He's even done like the Balkan Wars. So it's very fascinating to. That he does it. And yeah.
Okay. He's not on my radar, but you know, I can write him down as a potential guest for the future.
Again, he's the type of person that's actually going to be at the Old Glory Club where Arn McIntyre is speaking.
Is he too big for me? I don't know. I mean, I did just have an interview in the past month with someone that has like 200,000 subscribers. So,
I mean, he's kind of like,
he's
a Protestant.
Oh, he is.
That I didn't know. I knew he was religious, but I...
Okay, because a lot of these guys tend to be like Eastern Orthodox or something. The thing behind me in the background is like a Chinese cookie thing, but it's used to store coins. So it's actually really heavy because there's a bunch of quarters in it and stuff. So, yeah. Rogue Calvinist is an up-and-comer. Idol Killer hates him, so you know he's good. Okay. Calvin It. Okay. Yeah. I will look into more guests to have on. I do want to have some more controversial guests. So that's kind of like one of my goals for this year. I think I've kind of done that so far, but you know, we can get more controversial, right? And I want to do that, you know, just to be more journalistic-y, so to speak. I like what Tucker Carlson is doing. I think we could use that a little bit more in the Christian space. Just some ideas that I'm floating. So anyway, that's all I got for today. Thanks for all the guest suggestions. You guys have been doing well with that. Next week, we do have a guest, because next week the live stream will be on David Platt. So that's going to be next week. I also have a big story coming out next week as well. So I'll tease that. I know I'm not going to tell you what that story is about, because it needs the secrecy for now. But next week is coming out. So there's some Krakens being released next week. So other than that, you got anything else to say?
Nope. I got some reviews going with the Total State. That's done. So that's the big thing that's already done.
Okay. So I'll maybe reach out to Arn McIntyre, see if we can get him on.
Yeah, because I got questions.
And we got the Southern Baptist Convention coming up. So we will have a live stream on the Southern Baptist Convention, days 1 and 2. And supposedly those are going to be long days, because Jared Moore said that they're not going to elect the president until the evening. So that's going to be a long day. Looking forward to that, though. But anyway, have a blessed night, everybody. Stay based, Christ is King, and we will catch you on the next one.